Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's the 24th of May, 2021, and we have a really interesting show for you this morning. Okay, I've got Howard Bell of ABL Schools, which is a company. I find this so fascinating. It's an operational approach to equity for schools, specifically involving master scheduling. And we also have for you Andrea Clay, who is the Director of Legal Strategy and Policy at Columbia University Center. Hold on. Morning cough, sorry about that. Columbia University Center for Public Research and Leadership, and they've been working on the importance of master scheduling and equity as well. So together we've got the vendor side, we've got the educational side to talk about the master schedule at your school and equity. And as you know, that's very important to us because we are the voice here at Education Talk Radio of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over at ace-ed.org. And as you know, if you go over there to ace-ed.org, you'll see our online journal, which is Equity and Access, which is the only journal in pre-K-12 talking about equity and access all the time. So please go over. You can join with us over there. You can see all the amazing companies that work with us. You can read the wonderful articles in our magazine, et cetera, et cetera. It's all free, and it's all for pre-K-12 people over at ace-ed.org. So I hope you take advantage of that and join it. And without further ado, that was a good introduction. Andrea, good morning. It's Larry Jacobs here.
Good morning, Larry. Hi, Dan.
I'm fine. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Great to be here.
Good, good. Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here. All right. And Andrea, tell us what you do. You're Director of Legal Strategy at Columbia University Center for Public Research and Leadership. Is that part of the education school?
No, we're not. We're actually, we're housed in the law school. We're an interdisciplinary, we're an education research and policy center. We're housed at Columbia University, but we're within the law school. And basically what we offer is an interdisciplinary set of graduate students, rigorous coursework and experiential learning opportunities in the hopes that they become the next generation of education leaders. So we do have students from Teachers College at Columbia and a number of other partner schools. And, yeah, that's what we do at SUPERL.
That's pretty cool. I got to tell you, we're going to learn a lot about this today. And by the way, you were a former middle school English teacher, taught in Newark, New Jersey, and then you got your law degree, et cetera. Good morning, Howard. It's nice to meet you. I'm Larry.
Hey, Larry. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. You are the CEO of ABL Schools. And by the way, I know you know that. I'm telling everybody else. Okay? And ABL Schools, tell us all about that. Howard Bell, everybody.
So let me first tell you, Larry, it's called ABL. So it's ABL, but it's pronounced ABL without the E.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
No problem. So ABL is a company that, as you said, operationalizes equity by working with state, district, and school leaders, helping them to understand the inequities caused by the master scheduling process, to create lasting plans on how to eliminate the barriers that created those inequities, and then using our master scheduling tool, we're able to enhance the master scheduling process to ensure that they have transparency, visibility, and an ability to measure the progress they make as they use these plans to create a more equitable environment for students going forward. And so that's what we do primarily.
It's pretty amazing, and it's something. And we're the American Consortium for Equity in Education, and I never hear anything about the importance of scheduling and equity. And this show, to me, just nails it so perfectly, and it's something that we don't put enough thought into. All right, I really want to get into that, but I must say, I feel like I'm doing eHarmony. Andrea, how did you and Howard find each other, if I may, okay, business-wise, all right, and put all this, start working together? It's an interesting mix here. Andrea, let's hear the woman's side first.
Definitely. Well, when we first started looking at the nexus between master scheduling and equity, it wasn't very long before ABL came up. Several of the sort of case studies and sites that we were looking at that had already taken a strategic and equitable approach to scheduling were using Able. We're partnered with Able, and so it was pretty easy to come across them as soon as we started digging into how to use scheduling as a tool for equity.
Okay, and then I got to ask the next question. Wait, I want to ask you, whatever put you on the track of seeing a connection between equity and scheduling like that? And I'm going to stick with Andrea for a second.
Absolutely. So this is a grant-sponsored project. And so when we saw the opportunity, you know, as I mentioned, CPRL is really focused on – can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Sorry. We're really focused on equity and advancing levers for equity. And, you know, when we came across this grant, we had the opportunity to explore and research something that's often overlooked, like the master schedule, but that can be a strategic lever to serve sort of CPRL's mission, was one that we couldn't pass up. And so that's how we got into looking at master scheduling and equity and the connection between the two. And then we learned so much from Howard and his team over at Able as well. As we started to get our feet wet in the topic.
And Howard, how long has Able been around? And I know you're working with, I was over at your website, with like many school districts. Please feel free to talk about this. I saw Cedar Rapids, I think San Diego.
Yeah, we've been around for about 5 years now. It was founded by a gentleman by the name of Adam Pisoni, who was one of the founders of Yammer. Interesting story about Adam in that he became the CTO of that company and had never attended college. And so Adam decided that he wanted to figure out how to make the environment more equitable for students as they prepare themselves for post-secondary success and focused on this area. As you said, we have had great success with multiple organizations around the country. We work with OSPI out of Washington. We work with LA Unified. We work with San Diego. We work with Keller School District in Texas, Round Rock in Texas, Washington, D.C. Public Schools, State of Rhode Island. All of these interesting entities are, and Portland Public Schools, I don't want to leave them out. All of these
Portland, Maine or Portland, Oregon? Portland, Maine or Oregon?
Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Portland, Oregon. And all of them are, you know, uniquely focused on this idea that, you know, as you said, you know, there's all types of work happening in equity around hiring, around, you know, curriculum, around
everything.
Discipline
around
and
everything.
Attendance. But no one has been paying attention to the structure. And the structure, as we like to say at Able, you can't teach past structure. So no matter how excellent the rest of your organization is, if you're not providing students equitable access to that excellence, it really won't matter. And so that's why this became such a unique opportunity and partnering with Columbia. I mean, let's just be clear. I mean, it's Columbia. I mean, when you get to partner with an institution with that type of brand and reputation, working with someone smart like Andrea, it just all made sense to us. And so it was an honor to partner with them on this work.
Yeah, they're a pretty good organization. I have to tell you that at Old Columbia University. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Okay? You would agree, right, Andrea? Everybody agrees with that, right, Andrea? I got a smile on my face.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's a great school and a fun school. And actually, I got a buddy who teaches there in neuroscience named Stu Feierstein. Okay? And believe me, I know it well over there. It's absolutely an incredible group. All right? So, well, let me swing over now to Howard, okay? Howard, give us a concrete example of the challenge that you've seen. I'm going to go into this in more detail with Andrea, too. Like, you go into San Diego, let's just use San Diego. You go into San Diego, public schools, okay? Once you go in there, what does Able do?
So, you know, the first thing you have to do, Larry, is you have to inspire folks to be able to make the type of changes that are needed in terms of scheduling and equity. So the first thing you do is you give them concrete examples of exactly why the environment and how it is inequitable. So you show them how students through various lenses are experiencing access and education. So you look at students who are IEP students or special ed students. You look at English learners. You look at students who are on free or reduced lunch or in poverty, and you look at students from different ethnicities and races, and you can give them concrete examples that show that certain students don't get access to advanced courses or are distracted by courses that are on a course catalog that may sound interesting but don't prepare them for post-secondary success. And so once you're able to show them these actual examples of students' experience, that you then also show them how the students are experiencing teaching, how certain teachers are only providing their expertise to students in advanced or upper-level courses, while some of the students who are most in need of actual excellent teaching aren't in those courses, or that you're cohorting students together in certain groupings and treating them special in some way, thinking that you're doing something good for them, but actually you're isolating them in their learning environments. And so we show them all this data, and they are able to get inspired by it. And the first thing they say is, this isn't what we intended, one.
Of course not.
And two, what are we going to do? And then what are we going to do about it? And that's when we get into planning, helping them see our library of strategies on how to address these issues, and then using a tool that creates the type of transparency they need in the process so they can see the various levers that need to be actually pulled when doing master scheduling. Because as Andrea can tell you, it's super complex. And so as you're looking at the complexities in the master scheduling process, you have to understand how you're impacting each of those areas as you're making decisions, and our tool helps them to see that.
I'm going to learn more about this over the next few days beyond this this podcast,
sure,
because this to me is absolutely fascinating. By the way, he just pronounced it Andrea. I said Andrea. Which do you like, Ms. Clay, Dr. Clay, Attorney Clay?
Andrea's perfect. Thank you.
Andrea's good. Okay, thank you. I wanted to make sure I was doing that one right. So, all right, you just heard Howard, and you certainly know what they do. Andrea, so put that into your report. Take your report and what you folks do and tell people what you're pushing here, okay, in terms of what they need to do. How's the report fit in with Howard's work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one is building awareness, as Howard mentioned, it's been around for 5 years. And so the report actually can help, you know, expand the reach of the kind of work that he was just describing. I think also, you know, I don't know if I heard this in what Howard was saying, but in that auditing process, and I know Able does this in their work with districts and work with schools, can also become, you know, quite collaborative and can become a strategic process and really, you know, a process of continually improving the offerings to students. And so when we were doing the report, you know, it was a qualitative research report. So I guess that's one thing it adds is sort of a research report on the topic. And we were really investigating not just how you do this well and how you do this in a way that serves all students, but sort of some of the underlying challenges that are facing districts.
Yeah.
Today. So I would say, you know, the two complement one another. It's nice to be able to produce a research report that shows sort of some of the challenges and then be able to point to an organization like Able and others, you know, that are already and have already been working so hard to help support systems and just improving in this. Yeah.
Right. And by the way, I will have a link to the report, okay, on the description when people are listening to the show. Okay, they'd be able to click right through and see the report. And also, I'll make sure I link up Able School so that they can see where Howard's group is. I mean, it's just fascinating. And, you know, when I first started looking at this show, both of you, okay, I saw this as a time scheduling thing, all right? But as I learned more about it, okay, and what Howard just so beautifully explained a few minutes ago, Andrea, too, okay, when you say the word schedule, okay, maybe I should ask you this. Howard, you, define your word schedule, okay, when you talk about this, master time scheduling. When you say that, what does that mean to you? To a lot of people, they say, oh, well, maybe I should start the school day at 11 o'clock rather than 8 o'clock. Maybe the period should be 30 minutes long rather than 45 minutes long. That kind of thing, but I think you're talking a lot deeper than that, all right? So when you hear the word master scheduling, okay, just give us your definition, which I have a
you're
feeling
right,
is
Larry.
Going to be pretty darn close to Andrea's.
You're right, Larry, though. It is a significantly important and complex challenge, and the process takes into consideration much more than just time. It is right in the sense that what we are really trying to do here is ensure that we put students in a position to access the right supports, the right teachers, the right courses, and the right pathways, which is super important because pathways are speaking to whether or not they're going to be on a trajectory over time to be successful post-secondarily, right? You have to start with that in mind. But the scheduling is about what are you doing with your teachers? How are you going to align them to be a part of this process? What does the collective bargaining agreement say about that? Who do you need to hire? Who do you need to retain? What credentials do they have? What training will they need? How will you be able to handle them during the day to make sure they have time to both teach as well as collaborate and plan for the coming day? What are the state requirements with respect to testing and graduation? How is funding playing a part here? How much money do I have to allocate to things that I may need to do to be able to ultimately support them and get, you know, the right resources in front of my kids? What does the community think of this? How will families respond? And how do I make sure that families are supportive of getting their kids in the right classes at the right times, making sure that we're encouraging them to be successful? And then how do you ultimately make sure that this helps to create a return on investment for the entire community? These are the things that go into a master scheduling decision, right, and a process. And the key is to not make it tactical, but to think very at a very high level strategically, what am I trying to achieve, and then let all these factors, and even more that Andrea can talk to, become part of the puzzle that you're piecing together in order to make sure that your students are prepared for what's coming next in a situation where they have choices, where those choices are viable choices because we've educated and prepared them to be able to succeed in those choices, and they're meaningful because they'll be able to move forward in a way to be able to actually make the type of money they need to make to provide for themselves and their families. That's master scheduling, Larry.
Howard, that was great, by the way. When you go into a school district and explain all this, do the school district administrators do what I'm doing right now? Sit here with their mouth wide open going, oh, yeah, that's fairly obvious. Why didn't I think of that? And what I'm concerned about, this is so interesting to me. I've done a zillion podcasts about that. Well, not quite a zillion, 12 billion, not quite a zillion. Okay? But like, this never comes up. All right? And I'm curious. Andrea, I'll ask you. You work near a teacher's college, one of the better ones, I might add. When you go in and talk to them about this, what do they – I mean, I don't know anybody who's talking about this, which to me is so obviously important as we say it here, yet I don't hear this anywhere. What's the word when you talk to all the professors? Are they teaching it? What's – Andrea, Dr. Clay.
Well, we are research practitioners in K-12, so I didn't have this conversation with the professors at Columbia outside of sort of CPRL, but when we did have conversations, it was the case that a few folks were, we had to define master scheduling at the top, and we also sort of had to, just as Howard laid out, sort of explain that we were looking at the broad sense, not just the timing of the school day, but, you know, the length of the calendar even, how teachers and students express their preferences, who else was involved. In expressing preferences about, you know, where things were and when they were and how long they lasted. So certainly, you know, as the report, I think, showed there is a range, sort of a familiarity with exactly how much the schedule controls. And really, you know, what our goal is to bring, make it clear that the schedule is an amazing tool and lever for you know, designing the school. There's, you know, one of the very early quotes in the report is from a school principal who said, if you want to know the priorities of a school, just look at their master schedule. And I think Howard said it so well. It coordinates so much of the inner workings of a school and is so, you know, foundational to what's available, what access and what outcomes students can achieve there.
Well said. And Howard, I'm going to ask you kind of the same question. You go in, and obviously you're invited into a school district, and we use San Diego, good school district, okay? You go in, and you do your report. You look at all this from an objective eye, again, at ABL Schools, okay? That's ABL, everybody, ablschools.com, okay? You go in there, you do your report. Do they sit there and go, oh, my God, how did I miss this? I'm curious as to their reaction.
I've heard everything from – wait, stop, say that again, I yeah. need you to repeat what you just said.
Yeah.
I've heard people say, I can't believe this is happening. We need to do something about this. I've heard others say, wow, I need to understand why this is happening. I think it really just comes down to, making something that has been very tactical and sort of a check-the-box activity, Larry, to get it to the point where people are going, wait, okay, I know master scheduling is hard, and most people just want to sort of get through it. But if you step back for a minute, you get an opportunity to see that if you just slow down, you can't land a plane because there's just too much going on in education, so you've got to keep moving. But if you just slow down for a minute and think about a strategic approach to this, we can make real substantive changes. And so the reactions have been great. And, you know, the interesting thing is across disciplines, great. So if we show it to the state representatives or leaders, if we show it to district leaders, teachers, counselors, high school principals, assistant principals, across the board, once they see it, they get it. And they realize that, you know, it's got to be a much more strategic approach. It's been great. As I say to people all the time, just get us in the room.
Yeah,
you know, just let us get in the room. If we can get in the room, we have great conversations after we get there. Yeah.
Again, I'm sitting here. You can't see me, but it's so obvious when you say it, but it's not obvious, okay? And like you just get this. So when you, I'm going to ask this again. When you go into a San Diego, do they see it as a school by school approach? Do they see it as a high school approach, junior high school, as secondary level approach? Okay. Do they see it as a district wide approach? Because now it's a district wide equity question. All right. And they've got resources everywhere. All right. And they've got kids who need access to those resources everywhere. San Diego, I don't know exactly, but let's say they have 5-10 high schools. Okay. Well, they've got 5-10 high schools worth of resources and kids all over the city. Again, I'm not picking on San Diego. It's just because they've been using it.
Right.
Okay. So my point is, how do they see it? How do you approach it when you go in? Is it district-wide, by school, et cetera?
Great question. And so, you know, we treat it as a district-wide view and a school-by-school execution. Right. And so the district needs to understand school by school how students are experiencing equity, because it's different across each school. If you have an urban school or a suburban school, a large, a magnet, one school's in a certain neighborhood that has a different demographic than another.
Exactly.
You know, all of those things create different windows into what's happening at each school. So the district wants to see that from, you know, a district-wide perspective, because we want to start talking about equity. And equity means we're talking about the needs of the students, not about equal distribution of resources. And so once you understand what's happening across your district or across your state in certain instances, you can make more informed decisions as to how you're going to allocate and distribute resources to the schools to ensure that the students are getting specifically what they need. Then you get to the local control aspect, which then gets into each of the schools, who will be looking to see how these individual students are experiencing the courses that they set up within those districts. And so, you know, we'll look at all of that. We'll look at the design, you know, taking looks to see, you know, whether or not they're designing the courses in a way that ensures teachers can collaborate, to ensure that they're focused on the right types of academic outcomes that they think are important. But again, through the lens of equity, because everyone needs to experience this educational environment in a way that prepares them for post-secondary success. So districts love the broader view. Schools love to dig in and get really specific with each student one by one, looking at it in detail across demographics, because they're the ones who have to actually implement and execute that actual master schedule. So it's both, you know, and you can't do one without the other, because, you know, we even find ourselves talking to, you know, elementary schools, middle schools, as well as high schools, because this process feeds across all different groups, right? And so the earlier you can align students around a pathway, those more prepared students are going to walk into, you know, say the middle school, and are going to need to be aligned again. And then they're going to walk into high school, and they're going to be in line. So you have to have a continuum of this look that the district also benefits from in the process.
To me, this is just amazing. And I got to ask you, Andrea, okay, how old is the report now? Again, it'll be up on the website. How old is all this? Andrea.
Lee just published, about 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
It was published in May 2021. Yeah, it just came out this month.
Okay, breaking news. All right, it's out there. We're going to have it all late and all that's great. I didn't realize it was that new. Okay, that's wonderful. All right, I'm so glad we're helping you get the word out there, et cetera. All right.
Likewise.
So when you did this, okay, and when you looked at all this, okay, what as you got input, I'm trying to phrase this properly. What were the participants saying to you, okay, as you were getting input? I mean, they must have been, again, this is something that's rarely talked about. What was their attitude? I'm curious about this because I don't think any of I may be wrong, but I don't know how, if of any schools that are really approaching scheduling in this manner. And so you have a superintendent or a principal going out into their job, okay, without really knowing, like Howard said before, they sit there and go, wow, stop, tell me more, okay? They don't know about this. As you were putting this all together, what was the reaction of the participants as they were learning, as they were doing this?
That's such a great question. Yeah, the first is that there absolutely are school leaders and system leaders, and many of them who Howard works with, who are sort of already, they've already started to see this and start to tackle it. For schedulers, the people who are oftentimes using whatever scheduling software they've got or looking at the student information system and actually programming this, one of the sort of common refrains, the word puzzle was just used so many times. There was so much for them to have to hold on to at any given time.
Wow.
To schedule a school. And so that was something that jumped out as a theme across, whether the school had already taken the strategic approach to scheduling or whether, individual programmers were kind of trying to navigate it themselves. I'd say that was one thing that came out. The other sort of, especially among schools and systems that had already, either partnered with Enable or had already started to see sort of the connection between master scheduling and equity was just a common refrain that the schedule was so important. I'm looking at a quote, again, from a principal talking about how the master schedule can structurally and systematically create options for kids how, it was really great because it can be controlled at the school level, just as Howard was saying about school-level implementation. So there was a real sense of hope, a real sense of feasibility. This was not, something that was so beyond the locus of control of school leaders that they couldn't get started, within even the next scheduling cycle. Those were definitely, two themes, both on the part of what made scheduling so challenging, but also on sort of the hope and the feasibility and possibility to really sort of change practice and improve outcomes.
Yeah, and Howard, you go and you work with the schools. Give us, if you can, and I'm sure you can, just one anecdotal example. I'll give you an example. Like I'm thinking, they finally realized that their great physics teacher, if we schedule it right, could reach the kids in on the schools on the other side of town. I'm making that up, of course, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That
there
wasn't bad.
Of,
you could use that one if you want, but I just made it up. Okay.
Yeah, that wasn't bad, Larry. But
thank you. Thank you.
I mean, there are lots of examples. We've shown.
So people can get a concrete feel for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can, for example, show teachers, and I'll let it stay broad, who are only teaching IEP students throughout the day, or, interestingly enough, who only have two sections during the day and are really free the rest of the day because for whatever reason, the demand for their particular discipline isn't high. And so you can have, students or teachers who are being overutilized in certain populations and thereby isolated and becoming IEP teachers or EL teachers or African-American teachers. And you can, likewise have, disciplines that are being underutilized or maybe, frankly, just over scheduled. There's too much supply given the demand that the students actually have. And so what it allows the school to do is then say, wow, okay, you know, maybe that teacher is available to teach some other subject or support some other area. And at the same time, how do I expose my students to a broader range of teachers? This happens quite a bit, so that we can make it them more available to students across the school.
Exactly. That's my example. You stole my example. That's not fair.
Well, you know, I'm only kidding.
You can steal my example.
Let me get you the other interesting example that I'll give you, which is really more in the terms of equity. And again, letting our districts, we live by our confidentiality, and so we stay in that realm. But we've had districts where we've been able to expose, for example, that students weren't getting access to courses that, you know, if you looked at it strictly by economics, showed that there was something else going on besides just economics. And so, for example, we've shown that, you know, poor students of color, affluent students of color weren't getting access to courses that poor white students were getting. And so, you know, there's always interesting ways of sort of slicing it to make people step back and look at it and unintended, right?
That's a key thing. Well, the challenge is that everything that's the problem is unintended, and nobody has been teaching them to really look deeply at this. Okay, it is, okay, and that's why what Able Schools and what this report does from Columbia is open everybody's eyes. All right, it's astounding stuff, Andrea. I'm going to give you the magic word this last year: pandemic. Okay, it changed everything, remote learning, et cetera. As you look at scheduling, what did you hear, Andrea, in your report, re the pandemic, pre, during, and post?
It was so fascinating to have these conversations with folks in the summer of 2020 and then going into the fall of 2020, because it was like a different time. What we did hear was sort of at the start, the onset in March. If folks hadn't taken a look at the importance of the schedule, for sure they were by March and by the time the pandemic had launched. In many instances, schools for the first time were making multiple schedules within a school year, scheduling their students differently, sort of especially coming in back in towards the fall, and thinking strategically about equity. So one of the districts featured in the report really prioritized students who had shown over the course from, you know, March 2020 to the end of that school year, that they had challenges learning remotely, learning virtually. And students with IEPs and multilingual learners, they prioritized those groups to get in person if they so chose. And so first option for in-person learning at the start of fall 2020 in that district went to those students who were most in need of in-person learning. So you started to see, just as Howard was saying a couple of responses before about equity, it's not equal a portion of resources, it's a portion of resources by need. You started to see in COVID the use of the schedule to make that happen. I think you also started to see the lifting of some restrictions around, you know, seat time, around teacher schedules, so much of what makes scheduling complex. Some of those were lifted just to accommodate, you know, the unprecedented landscape of COVID and virtual and hybrid learning. And so, you know, you saw schools collaborating. In one case, two schools that didn't have enough student requests to offer a single AP course combined their students and offered that course to both of them. So you actually had two students, or you had a group of students from one school, a group of students from another school, both taking an AP class with the same teacher that they wouldn't have been able to take in each of their respective schools. So there was definitely a lot of innovation. I think also a lot of sort of awareness about what could be possible if you alter the way you think about time, the portioning time, people, and resources during the school day. So I definitely think it was a crash course in strategic scheduling for sure. And really, you know, for folks who have been using the same schedule for years and years, started to open up opportunities for how, you know, the use of time, resources, and allocation of people could change.
Right. And Howard, let me throw this as we wind down here for this podcast. Okay. Howard, let me ask for the future, the pandemic, okay, and what Able Schools does. okay? So I'll put that into a little bit of perspective, because there's still going to be remote learning. Hopefully we've learned from the pandemic, okay, you know, things that we were doing wrong, they came to the forefront. Howard, what are your thoughts for the future? ABLE Schools scheduling the pandemic.
Well, the good news about the pandemic, if there's any to be found, is it
yeah,
did
well, it,
force...
it does stink, okay? And no one would deny that. You know, we lost 550,000
right.
people, okay? But
that's
we got to
right.
learn from this. And that's, I guess, my point.
That's right.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. That's right. And the learnings were really around flexibility, right? I think it forced leaders, communities, to think more flexibly about how they're going to schedule in the future.
Yeah.
And this is where ABLE can come in, because two things happen. You know, obviously all the things we learned about lack of access and home environments for learning and so forth and so on. But we also realized that there was a slowing of learning momentum. And so as folks are returning, they can combine the two issues, if you will, and try to capitalize on some of the real benefits of flexibility in the context of having to accelerate learning. So when you think about, you know, how do you create environments for acceleration and being flexible, you start reevaluating that schedule and figuring out how you can create more teaching environments and how you can create more teacher preparation. How can you go about putting tutoring into the process and creating
yep.
environments where students can actually get access to it, not by just placing tutoring on a board and saying, hey, go get a tutor, but incorporating
yeah.
it through a strategic scheduling
yeah.
process into the actual learning day of the student and involving the student with the communication. We had one state leader who was interesting in saying, you also should think about, because of this flexibility, we started to learn a little bit more about how to meet students where they are as opposed to where we are at schools. And so certain students, you know, especially if they hit a certain age in high school, start working, providing for their family. Why are all classes held at the same time every
Thank
day?
You.
Why don't we create
yep.
more flexible environments for those students,
yep.
right? And so the schedule can help you do that, and ABLE is there to help you visualize that, design that, put it into an environment where you can compare one schedule against another and see how the decisions made in one schedule affect equity and the students' access versus another. And so ABLE is now creating transparency and capability to do those sort of, you know, balancing of priorities in a way that ensures the success of the student first, and then we'll worry about what we do with the resources to support that as a secondary support and not putting the resources before the students. That's really what ABLE has brought to the table for our leaders across the country.
I got to tell you, this is fascinating, both of you. You have stumbled on something I just love. Okay, and we're gonna work more together. I think this is just fascinating to us. We have our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and this is something I really want to jump on. I got to tell you, Andrea, this is just great, fabulous work. Okay, and just keep it up, and we're gonna do everything we can to help you get the word out about your amazing report, which is called About Time. And Howard, you and I too. I hope we'll be talking again in the future. Okay, just fascinating stuff
to it,
Abel. Okay, it really is great. Again, ABLE Schools, ABL, okay, an operational approach to equity, and this is what it's all about, everybody. I love it. An eye-opener, I got to tell you. So thank you both, all right? You're both in New York, I assume, today?
I'm in Northern Virginia.
Oh, you're in Northern Virginia. Okay, then I forgive you the Yankees and that sort of stuff, okay, and the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, I am a Yankee fan.
In that
fan,
case,
so
we have to end the podcast. I'm awfully – so what a tragedy. Only kidding. And let me just say, you're in Northern Virginia. I just want to say the Bruins beat the Capitals last night. Okay, sorry about that, Howard.
Thank you for that reminder.
You're welcome.
That.
Thank you. I appreciate your condolences. I appreciate that. All right. So, hey, you two are fabulous. I just loved every minute of this, and we're going to do more together. Thank you both. Please stay safe. It ain't over yet, and we'll talk again soon. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. All right. Take care.
Oh, my pleasure indeed. Bye-bye. Well, aren't they great? Okay, that's Andrea Clay from Columbia. Andrea is the Director of Legal Strategy and Policy at Columbia Center for Public Research and Leadership. The link to this incredible report, okay, about scheduling is up on site here. And Howard is the CEO of Able Schools. Again, it's ABL. Okay, ableschools.com. We'll do more. I'll get this all to you. Great stuff. Give a listen to all this. And then go over to ace-ed.org and see what we're doing all about equity. What can I say? I'm fascinated by this. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.